Hey, Danny. Daniel. Woo-hoo. Danny. Boy, there you are. Would you turn the heat up a little? I think everybody's cold. Maybe a degree or two. Everybody's cold. They're putting coats on. Yeah. It's hard to get this room regulated. Okay, let's jump back into our VLE stuff. Now, you guys are going to get a treat here because we were showing you the wrong slide show. That was tomorrow's. So I'm going to start at the beginning of the slides. We'll do a tiny little review because I want you to see the slides, right? All right, processing trauma, what it means and how to do it. And this is just showing you that your brain needs help, right? Oh, I'm not really cold. Everybody else is. I was seeing people put their coat on. Yeah, I love those things. Thank you. I have some of those, yeah. So there was my slide number 2 about the question of the pastor saying, why do I need to drag up my past, right? And then slide number 3, this is a great diagram of what we were talking about, the processing of trauma. You have a traumatic event. It overwhelms the physical and psychological systems. You feel intense fear, helplessness, or horror. And then you respond to that trauma, fight or flight, freeze, or altered state of consciousness, body sensations, and I can't see. Nurturing. Hyper vigilance, hyper arousal, which goes down now to the sensitized nervous system, changes in your brain. That all adds to the current stress, reminders of trauma, that's your implicit memory, life events, lifestyle. Then you have this painful emotional state. I call that being triggered. You can respond to that by retreating, be a possum. We talked about that yesterday, this cute little possum. Hey, my possum didn't come up last night on the porch. I don't know if it's gotten set free. So you can retreat by isolating, dissociation, depression, anxiety, self-destructive action, that's fight, substance abuse, eating disorder, deliberate self-harm, suicidal actions. Those are ways you fight yourself. And then ways you fight others, destructive action, aggression, violence, and rages. So there we go. And next one was that nice? Y'all were supposed to be able to look at that the whole time I was talking about attachments. And I know I love that. You can take that and use it as your safe place in your God encounter. You know? That great? Oh, even better. There you go. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Next one. Here we go. You have long-term memory that's either explicit or implicit. That was what we talked about there. And then emotional triggers. Triggers are your friend. There's you in the center. You have your emotions. Then these are the things that can trigger you. People, places, things, and situations. See, isn't this a much better? I couldn't figure out that other one. I kept thinking, why did I put that up? I love that one, too. And that slide is all about connecting with the Lord to when you're triggered, etc. Right? And the next one is another one like that. Okay. And I think we're caught up now with that. So we stopped when I was talking about how if you're not able to connect with the Lord, it's because there's something in you that is blocking him, because he always wants to be with us. And I'll give you another example from my life. Back in 88 to 90 was when I was in significant crisis, emotional crisis, and seeing a counselor, etc. But one of the things that was happening in that process was he was having me recount the abuse that happened to me, and it was re-traumatizing me. I didn't know. And tomorrow we're going to talk about that a little bit more about that, because I that's pretty prevalent happening. So anyway, I became suicidal, and long story short, the Lord encountered me and kept me from taking my life, and reminded me, he asked me, he said, when you were a little girl and you hurt like this, what would you do? And I said, well, I'd go in my closet, or I'd go out in the little corner of the field where we lived, and I'd be with you, and you'd come, and you'd be with me. And he said, do it again. And that was when I realized my problem wasn't what happened to me. My problem was that I'd forgotten all about Yahweh. I was so focused on my problems and my past that I'd lost sight of my reality and my relationship with the Lord. That's one of the reasons I love God encounters for inner healing, because it forces you to keep your focus on the Lord while he's taking you to memories that you need to look at. And he chooses what memory that you're ready for, because we're not always ready yet. So in that process, I created a safe place. He asked me for my imagination. He said, I created it as a place for you to see me, hear me, interact with me. So I did that, and I'm not going to go into the whole story. It's in the God Encounter training. But in the process of spending time with him in my every day in the bathroom, I created a safe place in my imagination. It was an opening in a field with an apple tree in the middle with a white picket fence around it, and there was a forest all the way around it so nobody could get in. I had a friend come here. He painted it. It was on that table. I think it's still back there. He painted a picture of my safe place for me. He was here at the training. But anyway, I would go there and sit under that apple tree with Yeshua. And that was for 2 years. That's how he put Humpty Dumpty back together. Well, now let's fast forward to a couple years into that. I was sitting under my apple tree. Yeshua's there, just like normal. We're encountering each other. And he says to me something like, I want to take you to my Father. And all of a sudden, I had all this fear and like, no way. I am not. Mm-mm. Now, when I was a little girl, I knew the Father. So it didn't make sense. You know, I had a good relationship with the Father because he would come and hold me and stuff. But out in this time of that inner healing time, the Lord triggered me on purpose, because I didn't know I had any fear of the Father. I was so comfortable with Yeshua for 2 years that I'd forgotten about the Father again. And so he said, I want to take you to my Father. And I was like, nope. I shut it down. I'm like, done. Not going there. Mm-mm. Didn't know why, didn't really, I just knew I felt scared, afraid, not going there. So I don't know, a week or so goes by, and I was not encountering the Lord. I was just reading my Bible. you can do that. You cannot encounter the Lord and just read your Bible. So I was doing that, and this particular day, the Lord just kind of dropped himself in front of me. and said again, you know, I want to take you to my father. And I had, all of a sudden, I had the thought, my brain had been processing this whole time. I had the thought, wait a minute, I trust Yeshua. And if he wants to take me to the Father, then that must mean the Father is not going to hurt me and he's safe. Because I had built that trust in Yeshua, I was able to say, okay, all right, I'll go. Let's go. And he did, and it was wonderful and amazing, and I never had trouble, you know. So after that, so that experience was my implicit memories coming forward. I didn't know it. Didn't know it. But the Lord knew, and he gave me the time I needed to get to a place where I could encounter him, where I was willing to. The blockage was in me. So I believe that's another reason God encounters are so powerful, is because they help remove blockages that we don't even know are there, because he exposes them. And healing, and because healing removes the blockages and the hindrances that keep us from being able to love Yahweh and love others, that's another reason why they're important. Plus, I could write an endless list, so could all of you that have had God encounters, why they're so powerful. All right, let's talk about transference. Often unresolved traumatic memories that come forward as invisible, implicit memory are transferred onto other people. For example, I'll give you another example from my life. Because my earthly dad was blatantly unfaithful to my mom, I subconsciously believed that Danny would be unfaithful to me. It was just, I transferred that onto him. And it didn't matter how many times Danny reassured me, it wasn't true. Because I believed that I transferred it. I fully believed it, right? And so anytime I saw him even talking to a girl or looking at just looking at a girl and innocently, I was convinced he was being unfaithful. And so I would question him every day after he'd come home from work. Who'd you talk to? What did you talk about? What does she look like? How old is she? What you? Yeah, for years, bless that man, for years, I was just waiting for him to be unfaithful. And I was always suspicious. And so those were implicit memories and VLE confabulated stories in me playing constantly. And it kept me in prison. It wasn't Danny that had the problem, it was me. Yet I believed it was his problem, so I didn't do anything about me. So that's an example of, and I am free of that. He's all good. I dealt with the root of that thing a long time ago. So if your earthly father was absent, angry, violent, et cetera, abusive, then it's real easy to transfer that onto the Father, Yahweh. It often is subconscious, and you don't even realize you're doing it. So that's another reason why it's really good to encounter the Lord and ask questions. Ask him. All right, let's look at some, these review of key points, just because these, I think this kind of takes all that I just taught and put it in a list here for us. Psychological trauma can be caused by painful events that may seem minor, so traumatic memories are much more common than most people realize. When traumatic memories surface, the toxic content they carry comes forward and powerfully affects our perceptions, thoughts, beliefs, emotions, abilities, and choices. This traumatic, toxic content comes forward as invisible, implicit memory, so that it feels true in the present and is not recognized as coming from underlying unresolved trauma. Our VLEs come up with an explanation that focuses on the triggering event or person in the present. Our central nervous system fills in most of the holes in the VLE confabulated explanation, and good old-fashioned denial and deception takes care of anything that's left over. The end result is that we usually believe the VLE confabulated story, accept the implicit memory content as true in the present, and blame the triggers as if they are the original source of the pain and upset, instead of realizing that stored pain is being transferred onto the present situation or person. If we believe that a person is responsible for the triggering situation, we will only feel heard, validated, safe, and ready for reconciliation if that person takes full responsibility for my implicit memory traumatic content. This creates an impossible situation because that person can't honestly do that because they didn't cause the pain that has surfaced from the past. Most importantly, if we are triggered by some aspect of our relationship or lack thereof with the Lord, then all of the above dynamics will result in traumatic implicit memory content and VLE confabulations interfering with and may even block us from encountering Yahweh. Last but not least, there's another reason why it's important to resolve our traumatic memories. Get this. As we age, the frontal lobes of our brains are especially affected, and the defenses we used to manage our unresolved issues are progressively weakened. As our coping mechanisms weaken, we become progressively more reactive and dysfunctional unless we also heal and mature. In other words, as you age, you will increasingly walk around in your psychological and spiritual underwear. Gave you a visual there. I thought about putting that on there, and I thought, nah. Then we'll have to rate it something else besides G. It might be important to wash our underwear before we grow old and others get to see it. If we follow the pain processing path by staying connected with others and with Yahweh, we will resolve the past trauma permanently, and it will no longer have any toxic memories that can cause trouble by coming forward as implicit memory. The first half of the healing journey is exposing and healing traumatic implicit memory and VLE confabulations. That's the first half. Yes, Celeste has a question. He's coming.
Now, what if you were standing in front of your father who did cause a lot of the pain and the triggers are coming forward and he violated you? How do you resolve that? Like, it's not all your fault. And he's not going to repent.
Right. So you have a few things happening in that scenario. First of all, you would have to ask yourself, am I really in a position where he's going to violate me right now? And if the answer is no, then that's different. You know, if the answer is yes, get the heck out of Dodge, right? But if the answer is no, and if you haven't already processed that trauma, you're gonna fight, flight, or freeze, right? If you have processed it, then you're in a whole different position to respond differently. And in my life, my mom finally kicked my dad out when I was almost 16. And then I didn't see him for 10 or 15 years. I don't know. Didn't talk to him. But when I started, when I went through the bathroom healing time, the throne room, the Lord asked me one day, he said, I need you to give your dad a gift that he doesn't deserve and couldn't never earn. And I said, what's that? And he said, forgiveness. And I said, I want to, but I can't. So you got to help me. And I had a vision of the cross, and I saw myself at the foot of the cross. And I looked up, and Yeshua was looking down right in my eyes. And the love and the forgiveness and the incredible mercy was just coming on me in waves and profoundly impacted me. And I knew I was forgiven and loved. And then all of a sudden, his eyes go off of me, and they look over here. And I thought, who's he looking at? So I turn and look, and there's my dad. And he's looking at my dad with the same kind of love and kindness as he was looking at me. And then he turns and looks back at me, and he says to me, Rhonda, at the foot of the cross, everyone looks the same. And so he can love us, even his enemies, with the same. And he's asking me to do that. So I was, because of that, I was able, I called my dad, and I was able to tell him that I forgave him. Not, I wasn't trying to get anything from him. I didn't want anything, but I wanted him to know that he's free on my part, right? And my dad was a very proud man, never apologized ever, never heard him apologize at all for anything to anyone. And so I wasn't expecting that. And he did and he didn't. He did it in the way he could do it. He just responded. When I told him that, he said, I wish it had never happened. And that was the end of our conversation. So because I was in a whole different place, I had a whole different response to confronting him than I would have 2 years before, or even a year before. So it depends. This does not, I'm not saying stay in abusive relationships. I'm not saying that. That's not what the Lord is requiring of us. So,
I just want to, and I think you just said it, is in order for us to appropriately forgive with the Lord someone who's hurt you that bad, you must be in a safe place. Like, you have to have removed yourself from trauma. Or, I mean, I don't know if you agree, Rhonda, but you can't just stay in that and keep forgiving again and again and again, and it keep, do you know, because I feel like that's what happens a lot of times.
Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's what Yahweh wants. First of all, you know, battered women, they do it all the time and keep going back and keep going back and keep going back. So that's not what the Lord's asking of us. I agree 100%, Dee. So if, hopefully nobody in this room is in that position, but if you are, get some help. Okay? Okay. Let's go to this one. I love this next slide. If you can read that. Wouldn't it be easy if you left that behind? Out of the mouth of babes, right? That's cool. Every memory that gets healed means you are one step closer to putting the past behind you. The truth is, none of us will be finished with all of our traumatic memories until we're with the Lord. And then all of them, the slate will be wiped clean and will be free. If the traumatic memory is presenting itself as an implicit memory behind the scenes, and if the person will receive your attunement, then their relational circuits will come online, usually, and you can offer to further help them find the true source of their pain. And that's one way you can access traumatic memories. Now, let me put a little disclaimer there. You have to be ready. Your brain has to be ready. Your brain usually won't let you go to things you're not ready to process. So that's one of the reasons, as a facilitator in God Encounters, we don't push. We don't suggest, never ever suggest, that somebody's been abused or anything. You know, don't label, don't diagnose, don't. That's for the Lord to do in His timing, in His way. And don't push people to go to memories. We don't even ask them to find a memory. That's not what it's about. It's about connecting with the Lord and letting the Lord do what the Lord wants to do. And He will tell you what you need to know. And you know, I've heard, and I was told with my psychiatrist that I wouldn't ever be truly healed until I remembered what actually happened. I have no memories from about 7 years old to 12. I have maybe one or two, but I can't place them in there. I can't say I was eight. I can't say, I kind of have a general idea. And to this day, and when I was asking the Lord about that, because somebody told me, well, you're not truly healed. I beg to differ, you know. So I asked the Lord about it, and He said, that's my love for you. You don't need to remember that. That's what He told me. He said, that's my love for you. So I'm thankful that I don't have to remember it. For me to have it blacked out, it must be pretty ugly and pretty bad. I don't need to know, because I'm free, and I just go to Him, and He's all I need, etc. It took me years to get there, but it's possible. All right? And if the Lord brings the memory up, so be it. That's why I encourage you to don't focus on the problem. We'll talk about that a lot tomorrow. That will get you, the problem becomes bigger when you focus on the problem. But focus on the Lord. Focus on everything that's good and right and lovely and just and good report. And, you know, focus on what you desire today for your life to look like. And we'll talk about why that's such a big deal in regards to your brain tomorrow. I'm going to show you how that works. So, all right. If the person hasn't accessed the trauma on their own, the best way is, if they're triggered, if they'll let you, the best way is to lead them to Yahweh in an encounter of some sort, whatever that might look like. Now, I've got an abbreviated kind of outline of facilitating a God Encounter session here. I know some of you, this is new to you. Others of you, you've had hundreds, probably, possibly. I have way more than that. So I'm going to just really quickly go through the outline and not expound on it, but just so you kind of have an idea of what we're talking about when we say a God Encounter session. Scripture tells us to enter His courts and His gates with praise and thanksgiving. So we come in with praise and thanksgiving to honor the King. He's a King. You don't just walk into any ruler's office. Imagine just walking into President Trump's place. You wouldn't even get past the gate, right? But yeah, we have a certain protocol to coming into the presence of Yahweh. Yes, He's your friend, but He's so much more than your friend. Man, He's to be honored. And if you don't honor Him, you're going to find yourself flat on your face with or without His help. Right? So come in with thanksgiving and praise. That actually is beautiful, because your brain is wired. When you start expressing appreciation and thanksgiving, your brain is wired to turn your relational circuits on. So Yahweh wants you to come in not as a left brain, understand what I'm saying, don't get offended, but not as a left brain, I'm seeking knowledge computer. He wants us to come in as sons and daughters that are seeking a relationship with him. Number two, we ask a person to give their imaginations to the Lord. We ask the Lord to cleanse it, to fill it, to make it the holy of holies so that we can perceive his presence. We ask the person if they, I love to do this question, especially if somebody's having trouble connecting. If you can meet with Yahweh or Yeshua or the Holy Spirit anywhere in creation, earth or otherwise, where would you choose that place to be? Because number one criteria has to be that they feel safe there. I had a young girl here who'd been trafficked, and she was around 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. And she said, there's no place safe for me. Nowhere. Never. You know, and I was like, okay, Lord, help, 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 help. And I had a picture of a cloud, and I said, hey, what if you could be on a cloud? Do you think that would be safe? And she thought, she said, yeah, nobody could get me there. So she saw herself on a cloud, and I could tell by her face. I said, you're on the cloud? Yeah. I said, do you want to ask Yeshua to come and be with you there? She said, no. And I thought, okay, I get it. Here we go. You know, and so I asked the question, well, why not? Why wouldn't you want him to come? She said, because he's already here. Beautiful. It was beautiful. So make sure that place is safe. That's the criteria. It can be anywhere. You could use that picture that we saw that everybody loved. Once they're connected with Yeshua or Yahweh or the Holy Spirit, I always ask them to describe that safe place. I want to know what it looks like so that if they get triggered in that session, I know what their safe place looks like. And I can say to them, let's go back to your safe place. Remember, it's a cloud and Yeshua's sitting there on your left-hand side. And, you know, I bring them back to the safe place. Ask if they'd like to invite the Lord to make his presence known. Ask Yeshua or Yahweh to reveal the root traumatic memory connected to their trigger. This is if somebody's triggered. Once that memory surfaces, and I tell people all the time, don't question the memory that comes up. It might seem like the most ridiculous memory. I was eating ants when I was 5 years old. I mean, you go, what? I mean, it might just seem so nothing or whatever. Pay attention to the first thought. I teach people that all the time. Your first thought, I want to hear it. I want to know what it is. And then most of the time, the first thought is from the Lord. And the second thought is yours telling you, your VLE telling you why that can't be possible. Right? Why it's not important. It's so silly. Once that memory comes up and they remember it, then ask them to look around the memory for the Lord. Yeshua was there all the time. He was everywhere. He was there with you. We just didn't know it. He was with us. We just didn't know to look for him. So look around that memory. Where is he? He's there. And if that person gets stuck, ask for Yeshua's help. Ask Yeshua, why am I stuck? He'll tell you. You know, it's like I said yesterday, being a facilitator is just a matter of asking the right questions. We don't have the answers. You're not supposed to give them the answer. If you get a prophetic word, an image, don't give it to that person in the middle of their GE. Write it down. Tell it to them after it's over. This has to be mindsight. That person and Yahweh connected like we talked about yesterday. Because they'll believe it if they hear it or see it, right? But if you tell it to them, they may or may not believe it. Stay connected. That's the goal of the facilitators, to keep that person connected with the Lord throughout the process. If that person gets disconnected, take them back to their safe place in the beginning where they were connected and ask them, that person, to talk to the Lord in that safe place about what just happened, what just triggered them. ask the Lord to show that person the real truth, have that person ask him, what's the truth about this? Not what you think is true. And of course, we ask him to heal. And this is very simple. There's more to it, but I'm trying to give you just a little flavor of it. Not just heal, but deliver you, clean it up, forgive you. Sometimes that person has to ask for forgiveness for their response to that trauma. They're not responsible for the trauma, but we're all responsible for how we reacted and how we respond to it today. And so we do that. And then, like I said, ask him to comfort that person. It's a big deal. If we are able to perceive Yahweh's presence and connect with him, the healing process is actually very simple. He will lead the process by helping us access the traumatic memories so they can be healed and comfort given. For people who are not able to connect or stay connected, the facilitator will need to understand the processing pathway so that he or she can help. All right, when an implicit traumatic memory surfaces, we can partially neutralize that implicit memory and the VLE confabulations by doing two things. Recognizing and acknowledging that some, most, all, a lot of what I'm feeling is coming from the past. And you can do that if you recognize, man, my reaction to this is way over the top. Why in the world am I so angry that Marie decided to wear a purple shirt today? You know? I mean, I tell you this thing called discernment. I just want to caution us believers because my experience with most things called discernment is not to be trusted because we might have a clogged filter. We might have this whole VLE confabulated story in addition to our past history with that person and how we feel, how we view that person, and it's all mixed up because you tell yourself a story. It's how your brain works. And what happens with us Christians sometimes is we take all that and we look at a person and we call it discernment. And it's a lot of time. If I have any negative history with somebody or anything unresolved or recent ouch from my interaction with Marie, man, I've learned I am not going to call anything discernment regarding Marie. I can't trust it because I understand how the brain works. I understand this whole idea because here's, in a simple form, here's what you're doing right now. Every brain in this room that's actually listening, unless you're napping or on your phone or doing something else, but if you're actually listening, and especially if you're looking at me, you are taking in all kinds of information. We talked about it yesterday. You're hearing my words, but that's like 15% of what you're taking in. And the rest is my body language, my tone of voice, my gestures, et cetera, et cetera. Plus, how you feel about me. Plus, your history with me, good or bad. And you take all this in. It comes into your prefrontal cortex. 9 times every second, you're making this thing judgment, so to speak. You're not judgment in a bad way, but you're pulling all that together and telling yourself a story. And then you take that story that you just told yourself, all this is subconscious, and you drop it down to where your heart, what's called the heart brain, we talked about this yesterday. Your heart actually has more neurons in proportion to your physical brain. It has more brain cells than your physical brain in proportion. So your heart brain, here's the story that you just told it. Your heart brain is responsible for the moral response. You take all that, and the VLE, confabulated story, gets mixed in there. It drops down. Your heart goes, yeah, that's right. Marie wore that purple shirt because she knows I hate purple shirts. She did it on purpose, you know. And my heart would go, write her off, you know. So my heart brain sends that message back up. It drops into where my willpower is seated in my brain. And my willpower looks at all that story and adds to it the moral response. I'm going to write Marie off because she wore that purple shirt. She knows better. And my willpower will then send that response back to my prefrontal cortex, which is like the grand central station of your brain, and tell the brain what it's going to do. Yep, write Marie off. She blew it. It's over. She's done this 10 times now, you know. So, I mean, that's real simple, but that's how it works. So, and in that mix, I could say, man, I discern she did that on purpose. I'm judging her motive. She wore that purple shirt just to get at me, just because she wanted to hurt me, just because she wanted to distract me from teaching, whatever, you know, whatever your VLE decides to explain it, it's going to explain it to me and by defending me and blaming her. That's why I said this is a complicated thing, but it's vital that we understand it. Doesn't mean that we have to figure it out, because I don't know that we can exactly, but just to know that that's how we operate, I just am so much more careful after learning this about drawing conclusions about people, you know. And have you ever met somebody and the minute you meet them you don't like them? And we call it discernment. I'm sure they have a spirit of Jezebel. You know? Especially if they're a leader, right? Or in the opposite, too, you've ever met somebody and you love them right away, instantly. That happened with Mary and I 30 years ago almost. First time we met, we just loved each other, but it was mutual. And it's been true for all these 30 years. Amen. Now, that probably was discernment. And there was a mind sight happening that happened between us. So just be careful is my caution there. I've just watched it. I've watched people get hurt so much from that when we call it discernment. So Greg, Erica has a question.
You kind of answered a lot of my question, but in differentiating between discernment and, you know, the VLE and recognizing that, but how would you be able to see and recognize this is discernment and not just my VLE, you know, because there's that filter of can it have a mix of, you know, one question, you know, where I can be discerning, but also there's a defiled filter. And then how to recognize, oh, this is discernment, I need to pay attention to this and not throw away the baby with the bathwater, so to say.
Right. And that's a great question. Discernment is mostly in Scripture concerning evil and good, you know, demons and angels and spiritual things. But so what we've kind of done as a people is we've taken it to another level to be judging people. And it's meant for the demonic and the angels primarily. People can have a demon and you can discern that spirit on that person or even in that person if they're possessed. So that's one aspect to keep that clear. We're not supposed to be judging people, and often we judge people and call it discernment. That's what I'm talking about. Be careful, be careful. And the other aspect of that is the minute you recognize you have negative feelings towards a person, do not discern anything. Don't trust your discernment. Don't acknowledge it. Don't. It's dangerous, because if you have negative feelings, your filter is clogged and your discernment's going to be clogged. So those are right away, forget it. If not, if you love that person and you're all for them and you've got a fantastic history with them, and all of a sudden you discern something that maybe isn't holy, pray for them. I don't be like that woman that came up to me in church and said, I don't like you. You know, don't go up and tell. Just pray. The Lord knows. Maybe that's, I think discernment's mostly for us to know how to pray for them. And if you're in a relationship with them that's where you have authority like that to be able to speak into somebody's life, that's different. But if you don't, keep your mouth shut. Because we don't have a right to get into somebody's hula hoop, even if we're trying to help them. Right? All right, Ed, over here.
One thing that you also taught, Rhonda, is in regards to when we feel we have discernment about someone, to, like you say, pray for that person, go to the Lord. And it's interesting how we have really learned over time whether or not it proves itself to be true or not is not based upon what we think or have felt, but it will play itself out. And so that's gives me peace to not have to be the one who discerns and then responds based upon my discernment. It actually gives me the ability to just back up and let Yahweh do what Yahweh does, and it will come out in time. And so just a couple.
Yeah, always look at your motive. And if you're trying to fix somebody, keep your mouth shut. That is not helpful. We aren't called to fix anybody. That's Yahweh's job. And he doesn't really fix us. He demolishes us, and he builds brand new. You know, he doesn't remodel our house.
Yeah, something I've learned about discernment and, you know, my prayer time and in my asking Yahweh about it, he's told me I gave discernment and I allow you to see things in people so you know how to pray for them, so you can partner with me in intercession. And then I go, okay, thank you, Lord, for showing me how to pray. Should I tell this person? And almost every single time he says, no, don't ever mention it to them. And even when I'm in conversation with the person I've been interceding for, that Yahweh gave me discernment of, you know, sometimes the very thing I've been interceding for will come up in conversation. And the Lord says, don't mention it. Don't tell that you've been praying for this, that I gave you discernment about this. Just don't mention it. You don't need this person to know that you've been praying for them. They know you care because you're in this conversation with them. They don't need to know that you knew about this before they mentioned it. You've been praying about it. You know, let me do this work. It's my show. It's my job. You just be there for the person how I tell you to be. You know, so that actually took a huge burden off me, because I just pray, intercede, and, you know, ask the Lord to bless, and it's usually all he wants me to do, which has been surprising.
Okay. All right. Where are we? Yahweh is always present. Is that where we are? Okay, great. Encountering Yahweh is easier the more we believe that Yahweh is always with us and that he always wants to help. If we're unable to perceive his presence or receive his help, it's because there's something on our side of the equation that's in our way. When we are convinced of those truths, then when an underlying trauma presents itself subconsciously and the present day trigger feels real and true and the VLE explanations still feel valid, then we are able to stop their damaging effects by recognizing and acknowledging them for what they are. And then we change our behavior based on the fact that Yahweh is always with us, and we know that he will help us process our pain. That's a mouthful. So I encourage you to read that again and again and again. Instead of following our old pattern of focusing on what triggered us, we can choose to surrender our confabulated explanations and accusations, and then turn to the Lord asking two questions. What am I doing that's hindering me from perceiving your presence right now? And what choice do I need to make to take this next step forward? Those are great questions if you're stuck, if you're feeling a lot of emotion, if you're facilitating somebody. Those are great questions to have at your fingertips. Those two questions are very effective in opening the door for healing and breakthrough. Instead of defending or fighting to protect myself, the goal is for me to be able to engage in constructive conversation where I can attune and be open-minded, compassionate, generous, patient, and flexible. But that can't happen if I'm triggered. When you realize that you're defending yourself, stop talking. Take a breath. Relax your body. Eat something. That'll get your relational circuits on, especially if you eat with that person that just triggered you. Right? Pull out that chocolate. Keep chocolate with you at all times. Oh, boy, I just created a doctrine. I kind of liked that thought, though. Now I better take that thought captive because I'm going to be packing chocolate with me. Oh, boy, it's true. All right, we talked about the relational sandwich yesterday, and here it is again because it's such a big deal. So, if you're triggered and you're in that situation, here's something you can say something like this. Our relationship is very important to me, but I'm triggered right now, or I'm about to be triggered. It's better if you can do this before you really get triggered. You know, learn what happens in your body before you're getting triggered. Pay attention. I learned it, and I can feel it before I ever get to that triggered state now. So, but say, you know, I'm about to be triggered, which means I'm not safe for myself or you. So I'm going to step away. If you need to do that, you may not need to step away. It's better if you can stay in it, but I want you to recognize that there's just, especially until you learn those 19 relational skills, it's hard to stay in it without hurting somebody. So you can just say, you know, I'm going to step away right now until I can get my relational circuits back online because you're so important to me. I am going to come back, and I do want us to work on this, but not in a way that's hurtful to you because I love you and I care about you. So you use that relational sandwich, relationship, upset, relationship. You make the relationship more important than your trigger, than your upset. Because if you do it the other way, it's going to blow up probably and get worse. Don't do upset, relationship, upset. That's not a good ice cream sandwich. Red X. Remember, defending yourself is always a joy killer. Write that on your bathroom mirror. Every time. Every time. And we all, it's our human nature to do that, to defend ourselves. Especially when we think we're right. And even when we're not right, our VLE jumps in there and tells us why we can defend ourselves. And we do it anyway. Even if we kind of know, well, yeah, I really was kind of rude there. Or, right? It's the most destructive position you can take in any relationship. And it takes a seasoned, gentle protector to be able to have joy. Joy meaning someone's glad to be with you when you're self-protecting. When you're self-protecting, it's difficult to be a gentle protector. I would almost say it's impossible. You might be able to do it, but it would be very hard. Because the reason is gentle protectors, at the very foundation of being a gentle protector, means you're looking out for other people. If you're self-protecting, you're looking out for number one. So that's why I don't think it could be possible. Maybe if you could, I don't know. But just don't do it. And you'll be safe. Simply recognizing and acknowledging our traumatic implicit memory and our VLE confabulations is a necessary prerequisite for exposing and resolving your underlying trauma. We can't deal with the underlying traumatic memories until we acknowledge we're triggered and then surrender the VLE confabulation, that story that you've told yourself, which often blames others for causing your upset. The best way to uncover hidden, implicit, traumatic memories is to encounter the Lord and ask Him to show you why you feel the way you feel. Don't get all hung up on, is this VLE? Is this implicit memory? Is it that's that left brain? That's just go to the Lord. Ask Him. And if you can't connect with Him, ask your friend. Ask somebody you trust. Hey, this happened. I feel this way. What do you think? Implicit memory, maybe. VLE, confabulation. If they understand this. Okay, so for example, I put an example here. Lord, Sally just totally ignored me. She knows how important friendships are to me, and she walked right by me so she could talk to Jane. She knows that I'm super sensitive to rejection. After all, I've told her many times to stop doing this. That's like Marie's purple shirt, right? And here she is hurting my feelings again. But Lord, I went to this brain seminar, and there's this lady there who was so glad to be with me. And she told me about some kind of confabulation and VLE story of some sort. And she told me to just stop and ask you, Lord, before I go to Sally and confront her with her ungodly behavior. So I guess I'll give it a try. Lord, would you show me if there's a memory that's hiding behind this rejection that I feel so often? And the pain that I'm feeling right now. And I just calm myself. And I wait. And I listen. I pay attention to what I'm paying attention to. And whatever pops up, I look at it with Him. Okay? Sometimes it's easy. And sometimes it's really hard to follow the healing processes. And here's four steps simplified. These four processes of engaging in the ongoing process of healing traumatic memories, recognizing when we're being affected by traumatic memories, making behavioral choices based on the truth and not on our triggers and emotions, and seeking the Lord or a gentle protector person to help you process the traumatic memories. Why is that true? Why is it so difficult to recognize and acknowledge our traumatic implicit memory and VLE confabulations? Number one, the I'm so happy I learned to laugh at my weakness. There was a time that would have devastated me. Oh, yeah, yeah. Anyway, that was fun. Okay, let's try again. Are we on number one?
Yes.
Traumatic, suppressed memories come forward as invisible... Okay, see, I'm replaying it as I'm reading. Okay, those things come forward as invisible, implicit memories that feel true and present. That's hard to discern. That's hard to know, right? Because it feels so true. And it feels so right that it's Marie's fault and Sally's fault and Tammy's fault and my fault. It just feels so true that it's hard to consider any other option. Number two, VLE confabulations bring the toxic emotions and beliefs of the original trauma and blends them together with the present event in such a convincing way that it feels intensely true that what just happened is the source of my upset and the person who triggered me is at fault. You see why that just sets you up for failure? Because, man, when you believe something's true, if you're like me, if I believe something's true, look out. It's going to take a lot to move me. That's a blessing, but it's also not a blessing. Number three, our central nervous system fills in the holes in our suppressed memories, and you don't even know it's happening. When you're telling yourself that story and those puzzle pieces, your brain's trying to put that puzzle together and there's pieces missing, your VLE has no problem creating the puzzle piece and it fills in the pieces that are missing in this picture to make it true to you. That's why it's, you can't tell either. And you could argue till the sun sets that what you believe is true. And the other person's like, whoa, wait a minute. There's a lot of holes in your story here. And you go, no, there's not. That's purple, right, Marie? That's purple. You're not going to tell me it's green. Oh. All right, number four. Our self-deception, denial, choosing to look the other way, choosing to blame others, keeps us convinced the problem is present tense. Number five, when a traumatic memory surfaces, it does so based on the age that we were when the trauma happened. For example, you get triggered and Gina triggers, and let's just flesh it out. Gina triggers me by telling me my nose is too big. Everybody's looking at my nose. See if it's too big. She loves me. She thinks I ought to know that. It's important. She discerns that that's important. So she tells me, I love you. She uses the relational sandwich. I love you. You're important to me. And therefore, I think you help you to know that your nose is too big. You might want to consider a nose job. Because I love you so much, it's hard for me to talk to you without staring at that big nose all the time. And so she does that to me. Well, I get triggered right away. Boom, you know. And so I get triggered. But here's the thing. What she doesn't know and what I don't know is that I have this memory back here from when I was 5 years old when somebody told me my nose was too big. And that, all those emotions when I'm 5 years old and they make fun of me at school and et cetera, all those emotions of a five-year-old who feels powerless because they can't do anything about it and everybody's staring at their nose and making fun of it, all that comes forward now. And I've got this big emotion, and she's to blame. Because I don't recognize that that's back there. And so, so I act like a five-year-old. Those emotions come like a five-year-old, and I'm going to respond like a five-year-old. You know, I might cry. I might, not that tears are child, they're, tears are appropriate at times, but, you know, this is not a necessarily a crying event. She just told me my nose was too big, in her opinion, right? I need a nose job. It's not something to cry about. It's just her opinion. See? I got my VLE operating right now. Boom. Figured it out. Got it sorted out. Anyway, so you're going to, when you have somebody respond to you, when something happens that you trigger someone and they respond to you childlike, you know right there. And if they can have the sense to pay attention, man, I feel like I'm a little kid right now. I'm acting like a baby, or I'm acting like, you know, and it can be literally a baby. So that's a clue that you might be triggered and having implicit memories coming forward and your VLEs operating. Yeah, Suzanne, don't tell me my nose is too big.
Oh, my gosh. You have a beautiful nose. This has been coming up a lot, the question, and then Celeste kind of brought it up. And I think I'm kind of getting some, but I'll give it to you here so you can help. So you're in a relationship as an adult. I mean, we all are with family members and friends for 20, 30 years or more or less. And so you've developed history with each other. So is it always, if you overreact to your beloved, that your family, friend, or person you love, have a good relationship with, is it always something about your childhood? Did it, could it start when you're in this relationship?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it could have started. It doesn't have to be way back. It could be something that happened last week, yesterday. If you didn't process that pain yesterday, your brain already has it filed away as traumatic memory with all the emotions you felt yesterday. And then today, that person does something else or somebody else does something similar, and that thing comes flying forward.
So you always want to go back to the source, and it's not necessarily always as a child.
Correct.
It could have been last week with what
yep,
you're saying.
Absolutely.
And, of course, hopefully that'll be easier to resolve than one that was as a child.
Depends on what it is.
Okay.
You know, yesterday could have been really traumatic.
Okay.
And that's, you know, the more traumatic, the little more work it's going to take to process it and get it in its right place. Now, let me say this, too. Just because you overreact to an event doesn't always mean 100% of the time that it's implicit memory. It could be that you got up that morning and you got news that someone you dearly love passed away. And at 3 o'clock, somebody is talking to you and they say something that's triggering to you and you burst into tears. Well, that's because you haven't finished processing that pain of your friend passing away. So, but if you look around your world and you don't have anything like that going on and you overreact, it's probably VLE and implicit memories. So you want to factor that in as well. You know, if you've got a lot going on in your world and you've got a lot of, like Job, you know, he got report after report after report of loss. Right? And he's a beautiful example of somebody who had really strong joy bonds with the Father. He had that relationship with God the Father, and they were strong. That's what kept him. That's why Yahweh was able to tell Satan, oh, yeah, you can test him. Because Yahweh knew the relationship that Job had with him was secure. He had a secure attachment. And so when he got that, all those terrible reports, he had to go round two. He lost his kids. He lost his fortune, his wealth, and everything except his wife, who was a troublemaker. And Satan left her there on purpose. And he responds beautifully. And then Satan comes back, is given permission again. And Yahweh set the parameters for him, said, yeah, you can touch his body, you just can't kill him. So he afflicts Job with boils from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. And Job goes out and sits in an ash heap to try to get some relief, put ash all over these boils. And his three supposed friends come to try to help him, tell him what he did wrong and how he sinned. Anyway, in that situation, Job again responds, though he slay me, I will trust him. That is a strong, secure attachment. He was able to endure horrific testing. And it wasn't because Yahweh was angry at him or trying to punish him or none of that. It wasn't that at all. Yahweh knew. He wasn't trying to make him fall. He knew it would actually strengthen his joy bonds, and it did in the end. And at the end, Job got a little dose of humble pie, and the Lord just, boom, talked to him directly, and even in a greater way, revealed himself to Job as to who Yahweh is on another level. And so that's one of the reasons yesterday's message teaching was so important, is that we get that kind of joy bond, that secure attachment with the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, so that we can endure whatever comes. And like I said yesterday, whatever joy capacity you have, if this is the size of your joy capacity, and a gallon of water is poured into this cup, it's going to spill everywhere and overwhelm. And that's what it's like for us. Whatever amount of joy capacity we have, secure attachment, that's how much trauma we can endure without becoming like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. When we overflow and exceed our joy capacity, we become not safe person. We become not Christ-like. So it's a big deal. And that's where Christians will walk away and get offended with God and blame him for the tragedy they just went through, because their joy capacity, their secure attachment was not there. And I don't know about you, look around the world right now, and I think we can all easily recognize how important it is that we grow our joy capacity, and quick. Because I think we're going to be enduring some pretty tough stuff in the very near future. We already have. And it's not going to go back to normal. There's no such thing. We are on that road to the Lord's return. And the signs are everywhere. And you know, you might believe you're going to be raptured out of here before it all begins. Well, if that's true, you're already too late. It's already begun. You know, I do not believe we're going to go through the wrath. The scriptures are clear. But the wrath and the tribulation are two different things. And some of this tribulation we're already in. And so our safety net is that attachment to Yahweh and Yeshua and the Holy Spirit. and that joy basis that he's glad to be with me and I'm glad to be with him, even if I'm going through the fire, even if I'm going through testing like Job, I'm glad to be with him. I will not deny him. So, yeah, Deborah.
Kind of what we were just talking about a little while ago. So if you have something like maybe you have a lot of old stuff that's surfacing and then you get kind of slammed with a new big stuff at the same time, like how do you like discern that or like, I mean, you go to the Lord, obviously, but like to be able to, I don't know how to word it, like you've got a lot of old stuff and then you've got something new that's big that like also just happened. Like, how do you navigate that? Or do you just, I mean, go to him and just process? Because maybe the new stuff is bigger because the old stuff hasn't been healed.
Absolutely. That is very common, actually, that the new stuff feels more painful and more difficult, more impossible because of the old stuff unprocessed. And the answer is the same.
Just go.
You go to the Lord. Lord, this is going on. What do I want to do? Tell me what. Show me what is going on. Help me. Yeah. And he's faithful. So, Al, Josh, back here. And then I'm going to tell one more story, then we'll have lunch. Remind me to talk about the rest of the day, because I forgot this morning to tell you what I was going to tell you today and what we were going to do. Oops.
Yeah, years ago, I learned how important joy is, especially for processing pain and trauma, because I was in a season of working through a lot of childhood trauma and, you know, emotional wounds and all sorts of stuff like that. And when Yahweh was bringing a lot of the different things to the surface, I told him, Lord, I can't do this. I've been told you need enough joy, at least equal joy, to the trauma. I don't have much joy. I think I have about 2 cups of joy right now. And he said, yeah, that's right. You have 2 cups of joy. I said, I think I need 5 gallons of joy. And he said, you're going to need more than that. And I'm going to help you get it. So that's when I really started focusing a lot with him on increasing my joy capacity and him filling it. And as I've been doing that for the past few years, I can process things much more thoroughly and with less difficulty with them than I used to. It's a whole different world. It makes all the difference.
You're a different person, Josh. Everybody on this farm, that's my son-in-law. Everybody on this farm recognizes that. Yeah. Okay, so I want to give another example from my life about this. When trauma happens at a young age and then it gets triggered as an adult and how you respond like that age that it happened. So, true story, when I was seven, I was six or seven, I'm not exactly sure, but I was in first grade. I think I was six. I was in first grade, and my mom, on a rare occasion, said, we usually walked home from school. I'm going to pick you kids up, 3 of us, plus my 3 cousins. I'll pick you up from school today. So I want you to meet me at the bicycle stand rack. I'm a rule follower. I learned really young, you don't do what you're told, you get hurt. So we get out of school, and it's pouring down rain. And so I'm a rule follower. She said, bike stand. I go to the bike stand, and it's pouring down rain. Been raining for a while, mud, puddles everywhere. But my brother and sister and 3 cousins stayed inside the lobby and waited for mom to drive up. They all get in the car. Mom goes home. And I'm out at the bike stand waiting. And by the time she gets home and the kids pile out of the car, somebody says, where's Rhonda? And she goes, uh-oh. So they all pile back in the car, come back to the school, and I'm huddled in a fetal position by the bike rack in the mud puddle when she comes and finds me. She's angry. Why didn't you, you know, why are you out here in the rain? You should have been inside the, and I'm just, I'm again, I do the possum. I can't talk. I can't defend myself. I can't tell her because you said to be by the bike stand. I just did what you told me. I couldn't talk. So we get in the car and my cousins and my siblings start, not my oldest sister, she never talked, but my brother and the three cousins, she rarely talked rather, started making fun of me and laughing. You're all wet and muddy and you're so dumb and why'd you do that? You know, I mean, all that in the car, right? So that happens, I'm six and a half or something. Well, fast forward, I'm around 30-ish years old and there are three ladies at church. They all decide, they wanted to go shopping and invited me to go with them. And it was like an hour and a half away, so I decided to go. I didn't usually do stuff like that too much because I was not high. I was high functioning, but I was not, a lot of people were a lot for me. So I kept small groups. Four was a little bit stretchy for me, but I decided to go. And I trusted the other three ladies and stuff. And so we go, we stop for lunch. I go in the bathroom after we eat lunch. And the other three ladies decide they're going to pull a prank on me. I'm in the bathroom. They go get in the car and take off. We had no cell phones back then. And I can remember, I walk out of the bathroom. They're not there. I go, oh, they must be in the car. So I go out where the car was parked, car's gone. Instantly, I'm on the sidewalk frozen. I'm 5-6 years old, waiting by the bike stand. I got left. They forgot me. I felt unloved, powerless, abandoned, lonely, you know, like hopeless. What am I going to do? I don't have a phone. I can't call anybody. How long is it going to take before they realize they forgot me? I mean, all these thoughts, you know, I'm 6 years old. So then, I can't remember. I have no idea how much time it took for them to come back. I don't know. But they could come driving back, and when they drive up, they're all roaring, laughing, like my brother and cousins. And I get in the car, and I am like a possum. I am shut down. I'm scared. I'm 6 years old. And they're all laughing, and until one of them attuned and saw my face. And here I am trying my best not to burst into tears. You know, I'm telling myself, don't cry, don't cry. You shouldn't cry. What? This is nothing. They're all like, you know, and I can't, it's the emotions are so big, I can't help it. And I busted out bawling, sobbing, crying like I did when I was 6 years old. And, of course, they felt terrible. And all the way home, all the way to the shopping event, I couldn't get out of that. I couldn't trust them now. No. You know, they're not glad to be with me. They left me. They thought this is funny. This isn't. Why do they think this is funny? You know, pranks are hard for me because of my past and because of other things. You know, people. I don't do pranks well. So I'm kind of black and white in that way. But anyway, so that's an example of an implicit memory and a VLE. My brain was working hard to make sense of that. And when I couldn't make sense of it, I made a decision then I will never go shopping with them again, and I never did. Even though they apologized, right? I couldn't overcome the unresolved toxic memory that was in that six-year-old memory box. And so later, of course, I did. And now if somebody were to drive off and leave me, I still wouldn't like it, but I'm not going to burst into tears, you know. So, all right. Last one, and then I'm going to tell you about the rest of the day. A young child expects others to take care of them, to feed them, to do the work. Because that's true, if an implicit memory surfaces that occurred at a really young age, then that person is probably going to expect other people to take care of the problem, to apologize, to make sure you're okay, rather than doing what a mature adult would do. A mature adult would understand that we are responsible to recognize, acknowledge, and resolve our traumatic memories by doing the work and not by blaming other people. So that's an example of how somebody gets triggered back to like 2 or 3 or 4 years old, where back then it was right for other people to take care of and solve problems. But when we become an adult, it's not appropriate. We're to be responsible adults. All right? Okay, so after lunch, we'll continue on this right here. And the rest of the day, so you're going to have your lunch at your table with your same group. If you weren't here yesterday, what we're doing is having our lunch at one of those circle tables, or there's some tables back in the kitchen back here in both rooms, and you form a group of 4 people, and this is to help build joy and increase your joy capacity. And so your facilitator at your table will ask again the question of what was highlighted, what really impacted you from this morning's teaching, and you get to all share and talk about that and ask other questions as you see fit. And then after lunch, we'll come back and finish the notes. And then this evening, we're going to whatever time we get done here, release you to go back to your home and have your supper. And depending on what time we get done here, we're going to ask you to come back for about an hour and a half. And we're going to have a Q&A time, discussion time, etc. Plus, we can decide what we want to do. We could do line dancing again. That grows joy, increases your joy capacity. Or if you don't want to do line dancing, you can go there and get a puzzle, get a game, and find somebody that wants to play a game with you at the back table. Try to do it in your group, that little 4-person group, whatever you decide. Figure out how to negotiate relationships when not everybody doesn't want to do the same thing. It's a good exercise there. Or if the Lord shows up and tells us something completely different, we'll do that. Okay? All right. Any questions?
So 1 hour
was 7:15. Yeah, 1:15. Let's be back in our seats. Hey, if y'all are going to do coffee and have coffee, try to do that before 1:15. Have that done, so if possible, okay?
So if you